makers of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another hour of entertainment brought to you each week from Hollywood. And starring Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, Roland Young, Connie Boswell, and Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. Tonight's guests of honor are Walter Houston and his wife, Nan Sunderland, and Ed Gardner, better known as Archie. Now, your host for the evening, Edward Arnold.
Good evening, everybody. We've got a grand show for you tonight, sort of a post-election day celebration. In addition to that, we have...
Pardon.
Oh, hello, Meredith. What's on your mind?
Eddie, it's just that, you know, I have quite a few talents besides the music, and I'd, well, you know, I'd like to see the Maxwell House people get their money's worth. I'd like to deliver Wilson 100%, if you know what I mean.
I'm sorry, old boy, but I really don't know what you mean.
Well, I'd like to act a little.
Yes. I was told about that. Well, this is going to surprise you, Meredith, but we're planning a dramatic sketch of the second part of the program, and I'll see that you get a part of it.
You mean I can act right away, tonight?
Yeah, that's right. Now, will you give us something musical to start the program?
Well, sure will. I've got a ding whaddler of an opening, a song called Chatterbox, and I worked out a kind of special arrangement, so it starts with the chattering light.
Uh-huh.
You'll go for it, Eddie.
Yeah, I know. Well, come on, let's hear it, will you?
Have you heard the good news? Why, this Edward Arnold is really sensational.
You know, I can hardly wait to hear Walter Houston and Nan Sunderland.
Say so, Roland Young has always been one of my favorites.
When it comes to singing, Connie Boswell is as mellow as that Maxwell House coffee bar in Hollywood.
That new concert hall idea of Meredith Wilson's wife for American music, I want to say.
I want you to meet an eccentric character who is a long, long way from home. I'm sure many of you heard and enjoyed the program last year called This Is New York, which, with Dean Staylor as master of ceremonies, presented various interesting aspects of metropolitan life. If you heard the program, you remember Archie, a strange young man who typified a certain species of New Yorker. My impression of Archie was that he practically lived in a place called Duffy's Bar and Grill, and I have no idea what he's doing way out in California. Oh, Archie... Archie, will you come here and tell us?
Thank you, my friend. Well, to answer your question, my trip to California started down in Duffy's Bar and Grill.
By the way, I really don't live down in Douglas, like you said. As a matter of fact, if I spend 6 days a week there, it's a lot. But anyway, I'm sitting around a free lunch counter there one day with Duffy himself and Slugface Sullivan, the extortionist.
Wait a minute. Archie, the gentleman's name is Slugface?
Yeah, do you know him, Mr. Arnold?
No, but the name sort of captivates me. Slugface. Oh.
Well, that was not his mother's selection, Mr. Arnold.
Oh,
nature kind of forced it on him. Well, anyway, we're sitting around with some of the other bon vivants in the joint. And
Did you say bon vivants?
Yeah, I got that one off of Dame Sailor last year. Gave him a cigar for it.
Yeah, that's a bargain.
I ain't regretted it. But you digress me, Mr. Arnold. As I was saying, we were sitting around. It was the day Duffy's wife had the twins, and Duffy had ordered a bottle of beer for the crowd.
Well, wait a minute. One bottle of beer for a whole crowd?
Well, Duffy ain't the kind of a guy to think money should be used for feeding pigeons.
Oh, I see. You mean he's stingy?
No, Mr. Arnold. It's just that he's kind of sentimental about money.
Oh. Well, Archie, how can Duffy's place be so popular if Duffy is so...
Careful. Duffy may be listening in.
So parsimonious.
Oh, that's different. You like that. Well, the secret of Duffy's success is that he knows all the angles. Now, take the proposition he offers me to come to California, for instance. You see this fighter, Gorilla Hogan.
Another member of Duffy's entourage?
Entourage? Have a cigar. Oh, anyway.
Thanks for the cigar.
Not a bargain.
Yeah, well, I ain't regretting it. Mm-hmm. I hope.
Well, anyway, Duffy owns this fighter, Gorilla Hogan. So Duffy figures on account of the gorilla's rheumatism, California is just the place for him because it never rains out here. All right, so how is Duffy supposed to know? So anyway, Duffy figures the gorilla is a cinch to push over a lot of these California stumble bumps, eh?
Well, I don't know. We have some pretty good boys out here.
Well, you ain't gonna have them very long.
Why, is your friend the gorilla so tough?
Mr. Arnold, on the days when his rheumatism ain't bothering him, he's positively murdered. Let me read his measurements. Waist, 53. Biceps, 53. Ankles, 42. Neck, none. Chest, normal, 83. Expanded, unknown.
That sounds like a pretty picture. But can he fight, Archie?
Can he fight? Let me give you a blow description of his last fight.
You mean blow by blow?
No, there was only one blow. The gorilla's fighting a guy named Cassidy, see? And the first thing happens when the referee makes the gorilla shake Cassidy's hand. The gorilla shakes it, and right away, Cassidy goes down for the count of eight. Then he makes a mistake. He gets up. The gorilla raises his fist and brings it down on Cassidy's head so hard that to this day the guy is known as Concertina Cassidy.
Well, how's the gorilla doing in California?
He ain't doing so good, Mr. Arnold. We're over at the stadium the other night and we announced that the gorilla will take on all comers, see? So about six or seven guys step up in the ring. Well, I asked the gorilla which one he wants to fight, so the gorilla says, I'll take that midget over there. Don't misunderstand the gorilla's courage, Mr. Arnold. It's a pretty tall midget. And in fact, he is known to his fellow midgets as Stretch. Well, anyway, the fight starts, and for seven rounds, the gorilla's making a midget look like a bum. And the gorilla ain't even got a mark on him, except for a slight gash under the knee. He's out in front by a mile, and then it happens. It starts to rain.
The rheumatism.
Mm-hmm. The rheumatism. It hits him right in the middle of the eighth round, and he lets out a shriek. So the midget says, what's the matter, gorilla? So the gorilla says, my rheumatism. So the midget says, where does it hurt you, gorilla? Well, the gorilla, who ain't so bright anyway, bends over, points to his ankle, and says, here. And that was the finish. As soon as he gets within range, the midget lets one go and knocks the gorilla and me right into a terrific homesickness for New York.
So the land of eternal sunshine is not for you, eh?
That's right, Mr. Arnold. No more California. I even made up a song about it. Would you like to hear it?
I'd love to.
Okay, Mr. Wilson, will you play it? California, here I go. Back to where there's ice and snow. The toughies, 7 feet are waiting right there. That's not good. I'm leaving. I'm grieving for the smell of Harold Square, so you can have them orange trees. I'm going back where I can sneeze. I'll ride the rods on a super cheese, Coney Island.
Magnificent, wonderful, Archie. And now here's Warren Holm, who says he knows how you ladies who are listening in can earn dinner table compliments from your husband. Not only on special occasions, but day after day.
That's Warren? Right, Eddie. You know, ladies, it's easy to win compliments on your cooking if you take the time and trouble to whip up some extra fancy dishes. But here's a little secret. To a man, almost any meal seems well-nigh perfect if it's topped off with good coffee. And if you take a tip from me, that coffee will be Maxwell House. You see, ever since it was created more than 50 years ago by a man named Joel Cheek, this famous coffee has been a favorite with thousands of men the country over. But today, it's richer, more delicious, more downright satisfying than ever before. Why? Well, because today, Maxwell House has an extra richness, a full-bodied, mellow flavor that comes from a very special kind of coffee. Highland-grown coffee from remote and fertile plantations of Central and South America. Coffee so rare, they command a premium price in every market of the world. But that's only half the story. Because the way coffee is roasted is mighty important to its flavor and goodness. That's why, to bring out the true, natural goodness of this matchless new blend, we've developed a uniform, radiant roast process, which roasts each coffee bean evenly all the way through. No chance this way of weak coffee from under-roasting or bitter coffee from parched coffee beans. And that's why today, more people are enjoying Maxwell House than ever before in its history. Have you tried Maxwell House coffee lately? The proof of this finest of coffees is in the drinking. And order a pound tomorrow, won't you? We really think that steaming, fragrant cup of Maxwell House will prompt your husband to say,
"Delicious dinner! And gee, honey, this Maxwell House makes the best cup of coffee I ever tasted."
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you're right. It's Fanny Bryce's Baby Snooks. Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, is not in a very pleasant mood this evening. He has received a notice from the bank that his account is overdrawn, and so we find him hard at work checking his statements. Just listen.
Grocery, 1035. Check for the gas and electricity. Oh, what's this? Milliner, $27. $27 for that broken-down hat. Is it any wonder I'm overdrawn? Now, where the dickens is that...
Hello, Daddy.
Hello, run along in place, Snooks. I've got a word.
What you doing?
I'm checking my bank statement.
Why?
Because something is missing. I'm looking for a draft.
Shall I open the window, Daddy?
It's not a draft from the window. It's a draft from the bank. And it's making me sick.
Can you feel a draft from the bank?
I can't feel any draft. I'm looking for a draft from the bank that's not among my checks.
What's checks, Daddy?
These little slips of paper are checks. It's the same as money.
Is it?
Yes. Here's one for $50. Here's another for $210. And here's one for $43.50.
What do you do with them, Daddy?
You cash them at the bank.
Let's go get the money, Daddy.
Oh, don't be silly. I can't get any money for these.
Why?
Because they've already been canceled. Somebody else got the money.
How?
By presenting these checks at the bank.
Which bank?
Any bank.
Well, you got the checks now, ain't you?
Yes.
Well, then let's go get the money.
Snooks, I just told you these checks have been canceled. They don't pay a check more than once.
Why?
I don't know. Some dopey rule the banks make up. Now, leave me alone.
Why are you so mad, Daddy?
I'm not mad. My account has been overdrawn. So naturally, I feel blue.
You feel blue?
Certainly I feel blue, because I'm in the red.
What?
Oh, don't look at me like I'm crazy. It's just an expression. When a man's in the red, he's blue. And as soon as he gets out of the red and into the black, he's in the pink again.
You feel awful, don't you, Daddy?
I feel terrible. Now go away and let me work.
I'll be quiet, Daddy.
All right. But no questions. Understand?
Understand.
Okay. Rent check, butcher check,
Daddy!
Department. I thought you said you wouldn't ask any questions.
There's a time we need a law question.
Is it important?
It's very important, Daddy.
All right. What is it?
How far can a cat spit?
Now, what kind of a question is that? What do I care how far a cat can spit? Where's that missing check? Washing machine bill, laundry check, milliner, $18. Milliner, $18. That's fine. Another hat. That's wonderful.
You like it, Daddy?
No, I hate it. She buys a hat every 5 minutes, but I can't keep up my payments on the building alone.
What's building alone, Daddy?
It's a game.
Let's play it.
You want to play building alone?
Yeah. How do you play?
You get out of the building and leave me alone. Oh, boy. Did you step into that one?
You feel better now, don't you, Daddy?
Yeah, I feel a little better. Now, please be quiet and let me get through here.
All right. Daddy!
What is it?
When is Thanksgiving?
Oh, it's the last Thursday. No, it's the second Thursday, I think. Or something like that. They haven't decided yet.
Haven't decided what?
What day it is.
What day what is?
Thanksgiving. It used to be the last Thursday in November. That's the day when the pilgrims landed in America.
Last Thursday?
Yes.
I want to see them.
Oh, you can't see them.
Why?
Because they're all dead. They started out for America 300 years ago.
And they just got here last Thursday.
No, they didn't get here last Thursday. They got here in 1620.
Who did?
The pilgrims! So now we celebrate their arrival by killing a turkey and offering thanks. And everybody's supposed to be thankful.
And the turkey too?
No. Turkeys don't know about Thanksgiving. We use the turkey as a symbol because that's the first food the pilgrims found.
Who's the pilgrims?
The people who first came here. They landed on Plymouth Rock.
The turkeys?
No, the pilgrims! On Plymouth Rock!
What's the Plymouth?
Plymouth Rock! The rock they landed on.
The rock that landed on the pilgrims?
No, oh, look. You better let me find that check, or we won't have anything to be thankful for.
Tell me about the pilgrims, Daddy.
All right. They came to this country in the Mayflower.
Who did?
The pilgrims! They came here in 1620.
Were you with them, Daddy?
No, I wasn't with them. But I'm very proud to say that my forebears were.
Did you have forebears, Daddy?
Of course I did.
Last week you said you only had one bear.
I didn't have any bears. I said forebears, my ancestors.
Your ancestors had forebears?
Yes.
How many bears did your uncle have?
My uncle didn't have any bears. Nobody had any bears. Forget about the bears. My forebears were my ancestors. Understand?
Understand.
Well, what do I mean?
That your aunt had four sisters and they were all bears.
My aunt didn't have any sisters that were bears. All she had was a son. He was my cousin. And he wasn't a bear either.
Was he a monkey?
No. I've never had any animals in my family. At least not until you came. Now go away and let me work.
Oh, Daddy, tell me about the pilgrims.
I told you, they landed on Plymouth Rock.
Where's that?
Snooks, is it possible you don't know where Plymouth Rock is?
It's possible, Daddy.
Well, I guess that just about makes you the only child in America who doesn't know that. That's really a distinction.
Ain't it wonderful, Daddy?
It's incredible! Now, listen. Plymouth Rock is in. Why am I telling you all this stuff?
I don't know.
Well, listen, Stokes, I gotta find that missing rock. I mean, check. I'm $70 overdrawn. I don't know where the money went.
I know, Daddy.
Oh, you do? Really?
Uh-huh. Mommy bought a hat with it.
A hat? She bought a hat for $70? Oh!
It's a pretty hat. It's got cherries on it, and celery, and carrots, and fetish, and you can wear it upside down.
This is the last straw.
It's got straw, too.
Oh! Well, if that woman can go out and spend $70 for a... Oh, Snooks. Is that the truth?
No.
Then why do you tell me such a thing?
I like to see your face turn blue.
Oh, you...
Will you do me a favor?
Why, certainly, Archie. What is it?
Would you mind putting on that Connie Boswell to sing?
Oh, you like her, eh?
Like her? The last time Connie Boswell was in New York, I even worked a half a day so I could go and see it.
Well, that's the finest compliment I ever heard. Connie, you can't resist that, can you?
I sure can't, Eddie. Archie, this one's for you. It's called My Last Goodbye. I don't take it personal.
So did you, but somehow we knew it was my last goodbye to you. Your eyes met with mine, your lips so divine, it was my last goodbye to you. For darling, though you are gone, my dreams linger on of days when you said I love you. I smile through a tear. Today makes a year that I said goodbye.
I wish I could do him. Well, maybe someday, who knows?
Why, you have a magnificent voice, Edward.
Well, do you like it, Roland?
Divine. How would you produce those low, melon-shaped tones?
Oh, those are stomach tones, Roland. I get them out by lifting my diaphragm.
I imagine it's quite a trick, I boy. Forgive me, I want to...
Well, don't worry. I enjoy little jokes about my hourglass figure.
Did you say hourglass?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Hey, but don't tell me that's sand in there.
Roland, you may not believe this, but I'm a very light eater. Last night I had a roast hummingbird served with a grape in its mouth.
Oh, it sounds awfully good. Do you mind if I copy it down to my file?
No, go ahead. You keep a recipe file rolling?
Of course. Cooking is one of my hobbies. Did I ever tell you my recipe for cooking a coot?
A coot? That's fowl, isn't it?
Yeah. Coot's the toughest bird in the whole world. Wait till you hear this recipe. You clean the coot and then put it in a pan of water with a brick. And stew it for about 2 hours. Then empty the water out and fry the coot with the brick in butter for an hour and a half. Then add some spinach greens and water, just enough to cover the coot and the brick, and let it simmer for 3 hours more.
And then what?
And you throw away the coot and eat the brick. Isn't that marvelous?
Oh, it certainly is. Is that recipe in your file, Roland?
It's in my file, but the strange thing is, it's not in my recipe file, it's in my scream file. Once I had a cook who...
Wait a minute. Did you say scream file?
Yeah. Whenever anyone tells me something funny and someone else says, oh, that's a scream, and I copy it down and put it in my scream file. Yeah. Kind of silly hobby, you know, but it gives me something to think about at parties.
That's fine. Well, what were you saying about your cook?
Oh, yes. I had a cook once, a former prize fighter. Terrifying fellow. An excellent man on steak.
Mm-hmm. Handy with his meats, huh?
Yes, he had a special... That's awfully good. Didn't get it for a second. Meat, miss.
Now, don't kill yourself, Roland.
Do you mind if I put in my scream file?
Is that the kind of stuff you've got in your file?
Well, most of them are like that, but of course I have a few bad ones, too, you know. Anyway, this prize fighter cook got confused between my recipe file and my scream file one morning.
Yeah, and what happened?
He found the coot joke, thought it was a recipe, and got one for my dinner.
Well, I suppose you fired him on the spot, didn't you?
I didn't dare offend him. I ate the brick.
Well, you might say that was pretty tough.
Yeah. Another one. But that was the beginning of my nightmares.
Is that so? Do you think food was the cause of all those bad dreams?
Not altogether. I finally went to a psychoanalyst, and he cured me in 2 minutes. Told me to fire my cook. Isn't psychoanalysis remarkable?
Oh, it certainly is. I think I'll go out and have a dream.
Mr. Young.
I beg your pardon?
I'm Archie, but don't mind me. If you think your doctor could help me, I've been having some terrible dreams lately.
My dear Archie, why not let me help you? I've read all the books. I can call every phobia by its maiden name.
You get around, don't you? Maybe you can explain a dream I've had for the last 3 nights. First, I dream I'm eating electric globes.
Another light eater.
Yeah.
Go on, Archie.
Well, then I bathe in a bathtub full of pool balls, and then I dry myself off with a stack of wheat cake.
Any syrup?
No.
Very bad sign.
Yeah?
Case is all too clear, my dear boy.
Well, tell me the truth, Doctor. I can't stand it.
The objects you dream of have one thing in common. They're all circular.
Yeah, sometimes they are, but mostly they're round.
Archie, just one question. We want a straight answer. When you were a boy, did you ever roll a hoop?
Sure, but what's that got to do with a dream?
Oh, man, you're a victim of hoopophobia.
Hoopophobia? What's that?
Fear of round steak, and don't shout at me. I didn't invent it.
Oh. You got me worried. Ain't there no hope for a cure?
Every hope, dear boy. Classical case of hoopophobia was described by Professor Incom McDervish in 1902.
1902? Is that the latest word on it?
Symptoms never change, Archie. Hoopophobia always produces a nervousness in the presence of circular objects. Do you have any symptoms like it, Archie?
Yeah, now that you mention it, every time I go through a revolving door, I get dizzy.
That's it. Hoopophobia, tertiary stage. Soon you'll fall in a dead faint if you walk past a man with a round haircut.
Gee, I don't feel so good right now.
Well, take it easy, Archie. You're okay.
I feel faint. I'm slipping.
Oh! Well, he's fainted.
I don't understand it. Get away, Major. Get him out.
Okay. Where am I? Let me get out of here. I feel sick.
Do you think I made him faint, Rolly?
Well, I don't see how. There's anything round about you, including your haircut. What's your middle name?
Well, don't tell anybody. My full name is Meredith Hexagon Wilson.
Well, that shouldn't trouble anybody. Except you. Let's see. Now, wait a minute. What's that button you're wearing?
Where?
In your lapel. Let me see it. That's it.
What?
You're a member of the Rotary Club.
Well, I'll be gum swizzled.
tradition on our Maxwell... Several years at the same hour, we've made it a tradition on our Maxwell House programs each Thursday to pause for a friendly, steaming, fragrant cup of Maxwell House coffee. And we're mighty happy to hear that many of you throughout the country observe this custom with us. And tonight, we're going to pay tribute to our guests of honor, a truly great dramatic actor, Walter Houston, and his charming and talented wife, Nan Sunderland. We hope that you and your homes will join us in a toast to Mr. and Mrs. Walter Houston. A toast in honor of the years they have so ably carried on the tradition of the theater, and now, via radio, are giving us the finest in drama. Is everybody served? All right, Meredith, the music that goes with the toast. We pause briefly for station identification.
This is Edward Arnold, and we continue the Maxwell House Good News program with Walter Houston and Nan Sunderland, presenting a famous Broadway play.
Eddie, is this the drama I'm going to play in?
No, Meredith. You'll have your chance later.
Okay.
We present Walter Houston and Nan Sunderland in a famous Broadway play adapted especially for tonight's performance by Robert Riley Crutcher. And as in real life, Nan plays Walter's wife, and it's my pleasure to present Walter Houston.
Wandering down this life, we occasionally meet people who influence our behavior. Just so does an actor portray characters that live in his memory. A few years ago, in a play called The Commodore Marries, written by Kate Parsons, I met and portrayed on Broadway a man called Commodore Trunnion. I shall never forget the Commodore. They said he was mad. And if beating life at its own game is madness, then the Commodore was mad. After 50 years of life at sea, he retired. Too old, they said. No more to walk the bridge. No more to shoot the sun or search the stars. No more, they said. But they reckoned without the Commodore. Landlocked he was, yes. In a house on the outskirts of a New England town. But his imagination was not tied down like the house. He gathered his cronies for his crew, and together they changed the house, rebuilt it, like a ship, with sails and bridge and poop and lifeboats, with hardtack and rum, made portholes of the windows. They slept in hammocks, dressed in dungarees and turtlenecks, but the Commodore never appeared, save in full regalia. Aye, theirs was a merry life in this ship on the side of a hill. All hands stand by! Furl topsail!
All hands stand by! Furl topsail!
Furl topsail!
Settle away the halyards.
Settle
away the
halyards. Helm a lee. 5, 4, 3, 32, 3, no lee.
But what's mad about that? All the thrill of shipwreck with none of the perils. Adventures but no risks. Fighting storms. All hands safe under a sound roof. All went very beautifully until one day the Commodore brought home a blushing bride, Miss Pickle. Vinegar Pickle, she was called in the village.
Pipe all hands. All hands. Commodore is coming aboard with his first mate.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Hatchways.
Thank you.
I've entered the harbor of matrimony, Mr. Hatchways, exhibiting the seamanship for which I am famous. There were those expected me to be brought up by the lee. There were rocks and reefs. There are mines laid in my course. But I brought her safe to port in a blaze of glory. Step forward, Mr. Hatchways.
Aye, aye, sir. How do, Miss Pickle?
Mr. Hatchways, I am married now, the mistress of this house. I prefer you to call me Mrs. Trunnion and not Miss Pickle.
Yes, sir. I don't blame you, ma'am.
Since that's understood, you may show me to my room.
Which cabin, Commodore?
Tell the crew to string a hammock aloft forward of the poop.
Where are the stairs?
Stairs? What stairs, ma'am?
You mean there aren't any? How does the body get up?
May I rot in my own bilge if that ain't a woman. Up the rigging. Climb the mast.
Mr. Trunnion, do you imply there are no stairs at all in this house?
The Commodore chopped them down with an axe so's the petticoats wouldn't be swarming over the decks like roaches. Ships is for real men.
Well, certainly needs a woman's touch. All these wheels and compasses and ropes and stuff will all come out. I was given to understand Mr. Trunnion has money. We shall use some of it to tidy up the house and buy decent parlor furniture like I'm accustomed to.
Third floor party! 32! Get in! Door
in! Glory be! What was that?
That was the watch, ma'am.
What watch?
We keep a watch out there to see people coming and going and storms blowing up and how fast we're sailing.
How fast you're sailing in a house?
Reefers ahead! Reefers ahead!
Reefers ahead, Mr. Hatchway. Take the helm. Fog light, sound the fog bell.
Mr. Trunnion, are you aware it is 60 miles to the nearest creek?
Don't worry, ma'am. I'm in command here. Down helm, hard down.
Down helm, sir. Aye, aye, sir. Right, sir.
Leo.
Mr. Trunnion, I'm speaking to you.
Hail Jack. Hail Crowjack. Yard around.
Crowjack, yard.
Steady the helm. Steady the helm.
Ship singing by the head, sir.
Helm by the low of the boat.
Sinking. Mercy.
Round to the foreyard. Starboard braces. Open the lee scuppers.
Ever in my born days.
Hold Jack. Hold Jack.
Ship floats. Ship floats. Reefers clear.
Ha, ha, ha. Did you hear that, Mrs. Trunnion? You're married to a commodore. Cleared. By the knees of a porpoise. That's navigating.
That's nonsense.
Yes, Mr. Hatchways. I should have known, I should have known.
The Commodore's wife is now the Commodore.
Yes. I should have known. Let an old maid get in there and our good life is at an end. It ain't eight bells before it's all blow your nose or wipe your feet. And the joy is gone out of everything. She hauls down the mizzenmast and puts in stairs. She throws out the ship's gear overboard and decks her out in pink things and blue things. Man weren't a man no more. He looked like a he, but he's got to act like a she. Yes, Mr. Hatchways. I should have known.
We were happy to be your crew, sir, when we enjoyed a proper man's life. But we have no society now. We drink solitary, sneaking. As if pleasure and jollity were a crime. No antiques, no song.
Billy, I have told you, Mr. Hatchways. I do what I can. I like it no more than you. But I don't lay the course here.
A man can't hawk up a whisper here now. Dasn't choose his gullet. With your permission, sir, the crew will seek another berth.
Another berth? Do you mean leave me, Mr. Hatchways?
When we signed up with you, we waived pay. We left it to you to provide us properly. But now...
Now I'm under necessities. I'm in other waters now. A man with a wife has expenditure.
We do not propose to be squeezed to the pit so that you can hoard your money for her to inherit. We'll find ourselves a vessel where we can live like men.
Leave me here alone, Mr. Hatchway?
You're a man of the world, Commodore. You don't expect us to sacrifice our lives for your beautiful starboard eye.
No, sink me, no. The mistake was letting in a woman. Once let them in, and before you know where Nott is, they got all their own way. You can't drink unless they want to drink. Got to eat what they like to eat. Talk like they talk. Live in a house like I'm accustomed to. Mr. Hatchways, we're going to ship cargo.
Mr. Trunnion.
We'll see who's in command here.
Mr. Trunnion.
When there's fair wind. Yes, I'll get my money and I'll get out of this. That's what I'll do. A narrow harbor I'm navigating. Rocks on my lee, reeks on my weather bow. Is Trunnion to shorten sail? Strike us to gallants for a puny parcel of petticoats? Is Trunnion to skulk through the sea of matrimony, poop first like the son of a wooden tree? Or is it to sail this voyage by the main course, with his colors flying and his guns unmasked? I'll get my money and get out. That's what I'll do. Huh? Gone. Mr. Hatchways! Mr. Hatchways!
Aye, Commodore.
Where is it? Where is it? Where is my money?
Your money? I don't know, sir.
It's gone. Go fetch it, I tell you.
Are you sure it's gone?
Look for yourself.
Yes. It's not a penny left.
Now, I've trapped you. You're trapped. You knew where it was hid in the bottom stair.
Mr. Trunnion, what is all this commotion?
I've always known where it was hid.
You knew it and you took it.
He did not, Mr. Trunnion. I did.
You? You broke it out of the bottom step. Then go fetch it, Mrs. Trunnion. Fetch it back.
I shall not fetch it back.
Are you out of your mind?
Oh, I'm not the one out of my mind. No court would say I'm out of my mind. I guess not. They would never say I am the one.
What do you mean?
I took your money to the Breezeport Bank this morning. And what are you going to do about it?
Fetch it back, or I'll notify the sheriff.
Do. Do. Notify him so I can go into court and have you declared for an incompetent.
Huh?
I'll be glad for the chance to let the court know what manner of man I'm married to. I'll be glad to describe him and his ways. I'll tell what his home was when I came to it. Steering wheels. And a man up there yelling half the night. And a searchlight and foghorn. And bedlam every time it stormed.
Why, it was only an antic.
Antic. I'll tell how he had a rudder built onto the front corner of the house. And how he chopped down the stairs. And kept his fortune in the step there and wouldn't thank it.
You're a smart woman, Mrs. Trunnion, but you'll have to be smarter before you pull this through. Commodore, we'll give her a bit of a fight on this, eh?
Aye.
I want you to make a noise. I'll have the authorities come and fetch you to the asylum at Wyndham and put you in a jacket. Now get your sheriff.
You would tell them you had to break out my money, because I'm a madman?
I see you have understood me perfectly, Mr. Trunnion.
But you couldn't tell them that.
Why not?
Because I'm not a madman.
How do you know you're not? Do you do the way other men do? Do you talk like them? Do you eat the things they eat? Do you dress like them? Do you want the things they want? Do you think the way they think? Don't people laugh at you and point at you? I'll be in my room while you think it over.
Mr. Hatchways, is it true? Am I a madman?
And they say us men is brutal. But it takes a woman to do a thing like that, making a man believe he's crazy.
Am I really crazy, Mr.
Hatchways? And who save a madman would keep his fortune in a step on the stair? Who, I ask you, who?
No. No, Mr. Hatchways. We've made an error.
We assuredly have.
We have fallen off our course, and this is what comes of it. We lived a proper life here in the beginning. We had joy of it. Nobody was never happy if we wasn't, the crew of us. And why?
Because we hadn't let the petticoats aboard, that's why.
No, that weren't the bottom of it. We've fallen off our course. There's the bottom of it, Mr. Hatchways. What do we do when it comes on a blow? Up and take action? No, we sit about warming ourselves as landlubbers do. We sit snapping our teeth at each other like sharks. That's why we've come on the rock.
Aye, aye, sir.
That's how the Almighty meant there should be captains in command and crews obedient and all together fight wind and weather.
Right, sir.
And smite me for the son of a landlocked horse. We're on the rocks because we've fallen off our course. Spike me! That's how we've turned into half-men.
That's it, aye, sir. We never should have swallowed our anchor.
Yes, we've had enough.
Hot belly.
Mr. Hatchways, go aloft and escort Mrs. Trunnion to me.
Mr. Trunnion, will you make this man release me?
He's carrying out my orders, ma'am. You are a thief. You have broken out the ship's stores. You have confessed it. You are a thief. The penalty for breaking out the ship's stores is to walk the plank. You must suffer that penalty. Mr. Hatchways, if you please, conduct Mrs. Trunnion to the plank.
What do you mean? Are you turning me out? Are you making me go back? Are you turning me out of my own house? You're turning your own wife out of her own house.
You have provided for yourself, ma'am. You need me no longer. Did you hear me, Mr. Hatchways? Conduct Mrs. Trunnion to the plank.
Out of my own house. Out of my own house.
Watch your step, ma'am.
Ah! Is it done?
She's walked it, sir. She's overboard. Did you not hear the splash?
Come daylight, you will clear the decks. Send all this floppy gear overboard. Hoist your mizzen mast. We'll climb the rigging like men again. And as for that creaking landlubber petticoat stairway...
Aye, sir.
In the morning, chop it down.
Aye, sir.
Ha ha, Mr. Hatchway. Now we can breathe fresh air again.
And laugh again.
And sing again.
And the land of the sky comes before.
think you'll understand why Walter Houston and Nan Sunderland are so well loved in the theater. Congratulations to both of you. A really grand performance. Now Connie Boswell responds to many requests in singing again El Rancho Grande, as only she can sing it. Give out, Connie.
Give me my ranch and my cattle, far from the great city's rattle. Give me a big herd to battle, for I just love herding cattle. Whoa, I love to roam out yonder, out where the buffalo wander. Free as an eagle flying, I'm roping and a-tying, I'm roping and a-tying. Give me my bridle and saddle, and my old pinto I'll straddle. I'll get the cowboy the riding, out where the rustlers are hiding.
Allá en el Rancho Grande, allá donde vivía, allá en la rancherita, que alegre me decía, que alegre me decía.
Give me the wide open spaces, that's just where I know my place is. I love the rodeo dearly, and the big round up here. I love to roam out yonder, out where the buffalo wander. As an eagle flying, I'm roping and a-tying, I'm roping and a-tying. Tie-yi-yi-yi-ing, give me my ranch and my cattle.
How I want to be
far from the great city's rattle.
Boy, that's for me.
Give me a big herd to battle.
I want to say
that I just love herding cattle.
Oh, day.
And Warren Hull wants to read a letter from a man whose usual experience proves again that when you buy Maxwell House coffee, you're getting coffee not just days fresh, but roaster fresh.
Righto, Eddie. Friends, the letter Eddie refers to is from Mr. George A. Christian of Venice, Texas. He writes,
about 5 years ago, we bought 6 one-pound cans of Maxwell House coffee. Somehow or other, one of the cans got lost behind some fruit jars. But we found it the other day, removed the vacuum seal, and made some coffee. Now I can go you one better. That five-year-old coffee was good to the last drop. And the last drop was good also. How's that for getting my money's worth?
Well, thank you for writing, Mr. Christian. Your very exceptional experience is proof indeed that Maxwell House gives every consumer a full money's worth of coffee freshness and flavor. For friends, even though you bought your coffee this very morning, here's an important scientific fact to remember. Air steals away coffee flavor. All coffee, ground or in the whole bean, starts to lose flavor as soon as it's roasted, if exposed to the air. In fact, ground coffee, packed in ordinary containers where air can reach it, loses as much as 45%, nearly half its precious flavor, in only 9 days. But with Maxwell House coffee, you'll always get full flavor, full value, every pound. Because we take Maxwell House, still fresh and fragrant from the roasting ovens, and pack it in the familiar blue super vacuum can. No air can get in, so no flavor can get out. Maxwell House comes right into your kitchen with all that wonderfully fresh flavor and fragrance sealed in, none wasted. So if you want more flavor per cup and more cups of full-flavored coffee per pound, try a pound of the new enriched Maxwell House tomorrow. Just remember, with Maxwell House, you're getting coffee not just days fresh, but roaster fresh. And no coffee can be fresher than that.
Eddie, is it time for the dramatic sketch now?
Yes, Meredith, now is the time.
I want to act in it, Daddy.
Now, wait a minute. I'll have to ask Mr. Arnold. Eddie, can you use the kid in the sketch?
I think we can find a part for her, yes.
Oh, but not the star part.
I want to be the star part.
Now, keep quiet, Snooks. You'd better give me a part, too, Eddie, so I can keep an eye on the kid.
Okay, Daddy, you're in. Now, we have one more part.
I'd like to have a shot at it, Eddie, old boy.
Oh, fine, Roland. That completes the cast.
I want to be the star.
Now, Snooks, dear, you know a little girl can't play the star's part. You'd rather see me play it, wouldn't you, Snooksy?
No, I wouldn't.
Well, why not?
Because my daddy says you're a big ham.
Well, I did not. I never said anything of the kind. Now, wait a minute.
Fights. We'll settle the star business once and for all.
I'll take it.
No, we'll write the names of all the characters on slips of paper and put them in a hat.
Oh, I like it.
Good. Then you can all draw the slip from the hat and there'll be no arguments. Who's got a hat?
Here, you can use my hat. But be careful with it. It's a hamburg.
Humbug, you ham.
What?
I didn't say anything.
You called him the big ham again.
See, nobody asked you. Wait till I get you home.
Well, here we go. The names are in the hat. You draw first, Snooks.
All right.
Well, did you take a slip from the hat?
Uh-huh.
Well, what does it say?
6 and 7/8.
Oh, put that back. That's Meredith's head size. Here, let me draw a part for her. I'll draw mine, too.
Now don't look at your parts at all until the sketch begins. You got yours, Rolly?
Righto.
I got mine.
Now, we're all set. I'll set the scene and we'll start the sketch. Now, some French music, please.
Well, I'm busy. Hey, fellas, give me something appropriate for my acting. There's always a fresh guy in every band. Let's go, men.
The time, year 1812, the place Paris. Seated on the steps of the city hall is an aged Frenchman, Pierre. He sits gazing off hopefully down the street, his long beard trailing below his knees. Suddenly, his old eyes perceive a banner flying in the distance. He tries feebly to rise. He speaks. All right, come on, come on. Who's got the part of Pierre?
I got it.
Oh, nuts.
Now, you can't help it. Go ahead, Pierre. Say the first line.
I wish to greet my sire Napoleon, but my aged bones are creaking with rheumatism. But, here is my daughter.
Oh, my father. I came as quickly as I could, but I couldn't leave the house till my petticoat was dry.
Meredith is a sister.
Oh, stop it, Snooks. Read your next line.
All right. My old eyes are failing me. Daughter, have you got the baby with you?
Yes, he's right here, Father. Isn't he cute? Say something for your grandpair, Mimi.
Oogle, google, woogle. This is horrible.
Look, Father, here comes the emperor now on his magnificent white horse. Mimi, listen to the big horsey neigh.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm not going to play the part of a horse.
What are you complaining about? I'm a baby.
Hey, who the dickens is Napoleon?
Oh, that's me. I held one out, boys. Now, loyal subjects, the emperor...
I quit. Come on, Snooks. Let's get out of here.
You can deal me out, too.
Now, wait a minute. We promised the people a sketch.
Show must go on, old boy. Fortunately, I've got a song about Napoleon.
You have got a... Well, I haven't. Go ahead and sing it.
Napoleon was a little guy. They used to call him Shorty. He only stood about so high, his chest was under 40. But all the kings in Europe, when they came to know his habits, pulled up their socks and ran for blocks. He had them scared like rabbits.
Napoleon, Napoleon, went up and got a rep.
He had a lot of them climbing trees, though he weighed 100 in his BVDs. But they couldn't hold Napoleon when he started in the scrap. He was 5 feet high, but he was one tough guy, and I take after Nap.
He was 5 feet high, but he was one tough guy, and he take after Nap.
Napoleon was a homely gink. He hadn't time to doll up. But though he looked like 30 cents, he packed an awful wallop. He knew the game from soup to nuts and worked it on a system. He'd meet a queen at 5:15. By 6 o'clock, she'd kissed him.
Napoleon, Napoleon, they thought him quite a joke.
Hey, take a look at the little pill, was the line of chatter that they used to spill. It was easy for Napoleon, and he wiped them off the map. He was sawn off short, but he was one good sport, and I take after Nap.
He was sawn off short, but he was one good sport, and he takes after Nap.
Thank you.
For the past 7 weeks in the concert hall, Meredith Wilson has been conducting an experiment in the creation of lasting and beloved American music. He has commissioned 5 famous American composers to write a waltz, a humoresque, a lullaby, a serenade, and a nocturne. Already, Peter DeRose's beautiful American waltz and Sigmund Romberg's American humoresque have been introduced. Tonight, the third is ready for its world premiere. The American Lullaby, written by a man who is one of the most versatile of all composers, Duke Ellington. All right, Meredith, Duke Ellington's American Lullaby. That was beautiful, Meredith. I know all of us here at the concert hall send our compliments to Duke Ellington. We all hope that the American Lullaby played here for the first time will live always in the hearts of mankind. Next week, Meredith will introduce the fourth of our new American compositions, a serenade by Louis Alter. And now Meredith has another commission to make for this concert hall series, the American Song Without Words. Who have you selected to write it, Meredith?
The man who wrote this fine popular song, Eddie. April in Paris. Yes, it's Vernon Duke, one of the foremost popular composers of our time. Vernon, I hereby commission you to write an American Song Without Words, to be introduced on Good News. And we'll all be looking forward to it, Vernon.
That's about all for tonight, friends, but next week, a special treat. We will be honored by the presence of one of motion picture's most glamorous personalities, Marlene Dietrich. Also, a return engagement for Maxie Rosenblum, along with our regular cast, Fanny Bryce's Baby Snooks, with Hanley Stafford as Daddy, Edward Arnold, Connie Boswell, and Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. Until next Thursday, then, this is Warren Hull saying good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop.
Heard on tonight's program were the selections Chatterbox from That's Right, You're Wrong, and Napoleon from Have a Heart by Jerome Kern. This is the National Broadcasting Company.